Good morning, early birds. You've caught the Weekend Worm, a special edition that recaps the top stories of the week and heads up on what the newsroom is following for the upcoming week. I'm Carl Lingle, your host. It is the second weekend of June 2026, Saturday the 13th and Sunday the 14th. From the latest National Weather Service discussion on the region's weather, cooler temperatures, widely scattered showers will linger through today, and cool and frosty conditions for some areas Sunday morning. A warming trend begins on Sunday and continues through early next week, with windy conditions developing ahead of a cold front on Tuesday. There will be a period of showers and thunderstorms and more gusty winds with the frontal passage late Tuesday into Wednesday. Generally unsettled conditions continue for the second half of next week, with more opportunities for showers and storms. Most of Montana's snowpack had melted out by the start of June. Montana Public Radio's Edward O'Brien reports that's a date for the record books.
May's warmth took a big toll on what was left of Montana's snowpack. According to the USDA's Natural Resources Conservation Service in Bozeman, most of the state's snowpack has already melted and transitioned into runoff. Most of the state's remote automated weather stations that tally snowpack had the earliest or second earliest meltout date on record. West of the Continental Divide remains the only region of the state currently drought-free. Drought is widespread east of the divide. Extreme drought has intensified in the southwest and is expanding into eastern Montana. A wet June could help improve the state's summer streamflow forecast, but full recovery is unlikely for most areas east of the divide. Reporting from Missoula, I'm Edward O'Brien.
The weather has visitors headed to the national parks. Yellowstone National Parks again breaking records in recreational visits. Yellowstone officials announced this past week the park hosted more than 570,000 visits in May. That's up 1% from May 2025. It's up 20% from May of 2021. That was Yellowstone's record-breaking year, with more than 4.8 million visitors. So far this year, the park has hosted nearly 773,000 recreation visits. That's up 1% from last year at the same time, and up 19% from 2021. According to figures from the National Park Service, Yellowstone National Park has played host to more than 4 million visitors annually over 8 of the last 10 years, and more than 213 million visitors overall since 1904. The Trump administration recently asked visitors to U.S. national parks to report displays or exhibits saying negative things about Americans and to restore sites as uplifting public monuments. But a large segment of the 35,000 people who responded instead criticized the administration. One visitor to a park in North Carolina called the administration's efforts un-American. Some commenters flagged interpretive displays as politically motivated. Trump administration officials are vague about the program's effects. A group called Save Our Signs says it has resulted in the removal or modification of at least 59 signs so far nationwide. Some of the locations where signs have been removed or changed include Wyoming's Grand Teton National Park, Maine's Acadia National Park, New York City's Jamaica Bay Wildlife Refuge, and Virgin Islands National Park. That is according to Save Our Signs. On Friday of this week, a federal judge temporarily blocked the Trump directive on the NPS signs, demanding the administration restore the signs that had been removed within 3 weeks. The administration indicated it planned an appeal. No surprise that politics continues to dominate regional stories. The Montana primary was Tuesday, June 2nd, and we've begun the ramp-up to the general election in November. The Montana Republican Party battled with members of its own ranks at the ballot box in the primaries between moderate incumbent state lawmakers and more hardline challengers. The result appears to be a draw, according to reporting by Seaborn Larson with the Lee Newspaper State Bureau. Larson says moderates won key victories by advancing longtime lawmakers like Lou Jones of Conrad and David Beatty of Hamilton to the November election. But he says conservatives are still in charge of the state party, and that may be key at the upcoming Montana GOP convention.
And I'm wondering if maybe the more hardline faction of the Republican Party that is running at least the party mechanism right now, if they're going to try to formalize some of this party purity stuff, and whether or not that'll have any kind of impact in how Republican politics looks going forward.
Republicans from across the state are meeting for their annual convention in Missoula this weekend. Wyoming's GOP is suing the Secretary of State for the right to financially back candidates in the primary. The party voted to champion endorsements at its recent state convention. KHOL's Evan Robinson Johnson reports.
Lawyers in Cheyenne and Washington, D.C. filed the First Amendment challenge. It comes months before a closely contested primary. Endorsed candidates for federal and statewide races will also have to pass a new loyalty test. This is the first year the state party will make those selections. GOP Vice Chair Bob Ferguson says that will have a big impact, whether or not the money can legally flow.
So those endorsements will come out sometime over the next, 30 to 45 days would be my guess.
Teton County's Republican chapter has said it won't join the state in backing candidates before voters weigh in August. It's likely too late to change state law this year, but Ferguson says the legal challenge could compel the attorney general to tell the legislator to do so. For KHOL News, I'm Evan Robinson Johnson.
The American Civil Liberties Union of Montana is backing a lawsuit that would pit state privacy laws against immigration enforcement. The ACLU on Monday of this week filed a brief of support for the legitimacy of the case, which defendants characterize as purely political. The lawsuit asks the Supreme Court of Montana to determine whether local governments should defer to state privacy laws or the state's interpretation of federal immigration enforcement. The question traces back to last October when the Gallatin County Attorney's Office denied non-criminal confidential information to ICE. According to Attorney General Austin Knutson, ICE is a criminal justice agency under state law and must be given access to the same confidential information as local law enforcement. Gallatin County Attorney Audrey Cromwell is asking the court to determine whether, legally, the state's privacy laws or federal immigration enforcement takes precedence. In its brief, the ACLU argues the case is an ordinary legal interpretation under emergency circumstances and should be considered. Cromwell, in her filing this week, said the lawsuit asks the court to fulfill its most core constitutional role, to say what Montana law requires. With rising food and fuel prices, families are thinking more about what they buy at the store and how often they drive. Montana Public Radio's Aaron Bolton reports Montana food banks are making those same decisions as they grapple with inflation.
After President Donald Trump launched the war against Iran, gas prices spiked. That trickled down to what we pay at the grocery store because it costs significantly more to deliver that food. Gail Carlson with the Montana Food Bank Network says food pantries' buying power has declined.
And it's a combination of the families needing more food and their inability to provide that extra food because of costs.
Carlson says food banks are serving about the same number of people as before the Iran war. But those families are relying on them more often. That's happening as pantries are buying less food because of inflation. That means families are going home with less. Food banks are trying to find ways to buy more food at a time, cutting down on fuel costs, but Carlson says that's not enough to keep up with rising prices. The problem could get worse as kids get out of school for the summer and their families lose access to school-based food programs. In Columbia Falls, I'm Aaron Bolton.
Children's well-being is slipping in Montana. According to a new report out this week, Laura Hatch with Big Sky Connection filed this story.
The 2026 Kids Count Data Book by the Annie E. Casey Foundation ranks Montana at 24th in the nation, down from 22nd last year. Montana has seen a 33% increase in the number of children without health insurance since 2019. Heather O'Loughlin is with the Montana Budget and Policy Center. She fears more children could lose coverage due to the ripple effects of Montana enforcing Medicaid work requirements starting this July.
This will put significant pressure on the state in implementing those new requirements, and often increased reporting requirements puts burdens on families.
The Kids Count Data Book measures economic well-being, education, health, and family and community factors. For the first time, this year's report gives states a score from 0 to 1,000. O'Loughlin says that number allows for states to see how they compare with other states and the nation, and they can better identify trends and improvements. Montana's score is 590, which is better than the national score of 547. I'm Laura Hatch, reporting.
Wyoming is having trouble supporting the well-being of its children in key areas, according to the Annie E. Casey Foundation's latest report on child wellness. Eric Galatas with the Wyoming News Service has more.
The 2026 Kids Count Data Book details how child well-being declined between 2019 and 2024, driven largely by poor educational outcomes and rising housing costs. Leslie Bossier is the foundation's vice president of external affairs. She says this year's report demonstrates that when policymakers prioritize investments in children, kids do well.
It is intended to shine a spotlight on the well-being of children and also to pinpoint investments that are making a difference, to show policymakers where they are doing well and where there needs to be greater investment so that kids can thrive.
Wyoming ranks third in children's economic well-being, but economic prosperity isn't reaching all Wyoming kids. Approximately 12,000 children still live in poverty. One in four kids are living in families that have to pay 30% or more of their income to remain housed. However, the state did see an increase in the number of kids living in families where the head of the household has a high school diploma. Wyoming ranks 12th overall for child well-being. I'm Eric Galatas.
When schools close for summer break, kids can lose the mental health support they rely on. Montana Public Radio's Austin Amistoy told us a new collaboration in Missoula is aiming to close that gap.
Like a public library pool party, a crowd of about 60 summer camp counselors in training work together to keep a dozen balloons bouncing through the air. The rules, they have to stay seated and they can't touch anyone around them. It's not just a fun break from training. The counselors are practicing a game they can use to help refocus campers when Missoula Parks and Recreation's summer camp series begins next week.
1, 2, 3, eyes on me.
1, 2, eyes on you.
See? Got this. You got it. That's gonna help.
Partnership Health Center therapist Rebecca Hamler runs the counselors through a slew of tricks they can use to help campers stay engaged and regulate their feelings. It's part of a collaboration between the health center and the city. The program will embed 8 clinical therapists in Missoula's summer camp program for the first time ever. Hamler says those counselors will support kids where they are during summer instead of making them seek out behavioral health support.
And we want our summer programs to flourish. So when kids have the support they need, they will succeed.
Missoula Parks and Rec's program expects between 300 and 600 campers every day this summer. The series runs until the next school year begins. In Missoula, I'm Austin Amistoy.
June is Pride Month, and the Billings community holds a slate of activities through next weekend. Nonprofit 406 Pride is organizing a parade, a high school prom, and a drag show, along with other local events. Pride events begin Sunday, June 14th, with a worship service at Billings First Congregational Church. Festivities pick up toward the end of the week with a youth queer prom Thursday, June 18th, for children 7th through 12th grades, and then a parade and festival Saturday, June 20th. The parade begins at noon in downtown Billings on 2nd Avenue North. A festival moves east to Sky Point on Broadway at 1 p.m., wrapping up at 6 p.m. For more events, check out the activity calendar at 406pride.com. rockymountaincollege.org. Rocky Mountain College's president is retiring. The small private college in Billings announced this week that Robert Wilmuth will retire June 2027, following 15 years of leadership at Montana's oldest institution of higher education. Wilmuth has served as president since 2013. He directed Rocky's Master of Physician Assistant Studies program prior to taking the role. Wilmuth was a cardiac, thoracic, and vascular surgeon at Billings Clinic before joining RMC. The college says the RMC Board of Trustees will begin a formal search at the start of the 2026-27 academic year. Wilmuth will continue serving as president through June 2027. Montana Shakespeare in the Parks is ramping up for the 54th season. This year, Montana Shakespeare in the Parks presents Much Ado About Nothing and The Merchant of Venice in 76 performances across the Mountain West. The performances began this week at the Duck Pond in Bozeman, opening with The Merchant of Venice. This coming week, Wednesday, June 17th, Much Ado About Nothing opens, and the summer-long road trip of mostly one-nighters kicks off Monday, June 22nd in Big Timber. In addition to stops in cities and towns, large and small across Montana, the tour stops in Idaho and Wyoming, wrapping September 8th in Bozeman. As always, performances are free and suitable for all ages. Montana Shakespeare's press release this week announcing the opening dates and festivities also included a shout-out to this year's poster design contest winner, Diane Haas, a self-taught digital artist from Eugene, Oregon. For more information about Montana Shakespeare in the Parks and the 54th season tour, go to shakespeareintheparks.org. Montanans are feeling some relief as the price of gasoline continues to decline across the state, along with the rest of the U.S. AAA Mountain West Group's weekly fuel report showed the average price of a gallon of regular gasoline in Montana dropped 10 cents in the last week to $4.28. AAA says this follows a national trend where the average price has been falling for three straight weeks. Since May 21st, the cost per gallon dropped from $4.56 to $4.12. The average price of a gallon of regular gasoline in Billings is at $4.20, Great Falls $4.29, and Missoula $4.35. AAA reports the most expensive gasoline market remains California at $5.80 a gallon. The least expensive this week is Indiana at $3.39 a gallon. Nationally, pump prices remain at four-year highs, but they are well below the record set in June 2022 at $5 per gallon. Construction is scheduled to begin this week on a terminal upgrade at the Billings Airport. YPR's Kay Erickson was at Friday's launch of the two-year project.
City, county, and aviation leaders gathered under a bright blue sky for the launch of a major terminal improvement project at the Billings-Logan International Airport. Assistant Aviation Director Paul Kara said the ticket counter and baggage area construction projects will improve the overall passenger experience at the Billings Airport.
It will streamline check-in and baggage screening. It'll increase opportunities for expansion of existing air service providers, and it'll create new opportunities for new entrants to come to Billings Airport.
Billings Mayor Mike Nelson said this project is an example that Billings is on the move.
We're growing. We're going to the future. We are going to be greater than we are today, each and every day.
Funding for this expansion includes a $3.5 million grant from the Federal Aviation Administration Airport Terminal Program. Construction is slated to begin on Monday and will take about 2 years to complete. In Billings, I'm Kay Erickson.
The Babcock Theater was shuttered following a ceiling collapse in May 2025. When the collapse occurred, the Babcock was leased from the city of Billings by Art House Cinema and Pub, and the events at the theater accounted for about 30% of the operation's annual income. Insurance issues complicated future planning for several months, but by the beginning of the new year, the city of Billings and Art House management had agreed that ownership needed to change hands. In April, the city sold the theater to Art House for a dollar, and the organization was freed up to begin repairs. Construction crews set up scaffolding June 1st. Arthouse Babcock Executive Director Matt Blakesley says the Billings community is interested in continuing the facility's diverse performance history as it moves into the future.
The Babcock is a chameleon in my mind. When you look at the history of it, it's going to be 120 years old next year. It was built in 1907. And for those 120 years, it has morphed and changed and shifted, whether it was vaudeville or opera house or, you know, silent film or live film or a boxing arena, like whatever the Babcock needed to be for the community at the time. That's what the story and the history has been. And so we take that very seriously in how we're planning and programming the future of whatever the community needs this to be. So whether it's Yellowstone Repertory Theater or Nova or Billings Studio Theater or some other local or a touring, you know, hey, there's, if this is the space that fits what you're trying to do, that's what we're here for. And, you know, concerts, and whether it's local musicians or traveling musicians, whatever it is, again, you can come in here and do that, whether it's businesses looking for a place for their presentation. And then obviously film is always at the center of the target for us.
Blakesley says the $5 million renovation will be gradual, but adding the new technologies to advance the uses, especially for live events, is part of the planning now.
We just had a flooring company in to look at our stage floor. Again, this is probably a couple years down the road, but we're trying to, as we're working on this $5 million campaign, like what is the reality of what is this going to cost and what are we going to do? We don't just slap a coat of paint on things. We truly want to restore where we can restore. We want to upgrade where we can upgrade. I don't think the community understands how truly special and amazing and awesome this theater is going to be.
Blakesley adds the art house staff is excited about the building's upgrades.
The narrative that we're saying is like, okay, let's plan the next 120 years of this theater, because there's so much life to be experienced there. And the stories of first dates, we got a lot of first dates to have, first kisses, you know, kids' first movies, and, you know, add plays into that and add concerts into that. Like, this is a space that everybody, our dream, everybody's going to have a story about the Babcock Theater because of an experience they had there with their community. And we just can't wait.
Construction continues throughout the summer with a target date for a soft opening in the fall and full-out operations in January 2027.
There's so many different things happening in those months to truly celebrate the reopening of the Babcock and to point towards that next 120 years. So rather than like a one-and-done grand opening celebration, we're planning like, let's take some time, because not everybody can make it on the same weekend and not everybody wants to come to the same thing. So let's have a variety of different things in there for people to come and experience.
For more information on the Babcock's restoration, visit arthousebillings.com. In Billings, I'm Carl Lenker. That is the Weekend Worm for this second weekend of June 2026. The Weekend Worm is hibernating for a few weeks, so our weekend edition will resume Saturday, July 12th. We'll still have the Weekday Worm Monday, and host Sarah Brown will take you through it for the next couple of weeks. I'm Carl Lengel. Have a great weekend.
The Worm is a production of Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Metal art call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.